Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And I'm super excited for today's episode and the guest I have. I have the founder and the CEO of Oh No, Renee Rogers. Welcome, Renee.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So you are in, are you in the UK right now?
I am. I'm in London. So northwest of London, and it's around 3 p.m. local time.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So if you could, for everyone, can you just tell everybody what Oh No is and what you're up to?
Absolutely. So Oh No is, oh no, I've had a car accident. So it's an app for drivers that if they have an accident or an incident at the roadside, they can use the app to register all the information that they need to collect at the scene. It bundles that information up and then it sends it automatically over to whoever needs to know, the insurer, broker, or fleet operator.
Excellent, excellent. And you have a very interesting story of how you came up with this idea, because you were managing a fleet of somewhere around 50 vehicles and this...
500.
Oh, 500. Excuse me. 500 vehicles. Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, no, it was so.
Sorry. Yeah. So if I'm recalling correctly, accidents were part of the problem that you're facing and drivers not collecting the right data. And that's how you came up with the idea for this.
Absolutely. So if you can imagine 500 cars, you're going to get a lot of accidents. And my drivers were taxi drivers. So they were doing a lot of jobs, long hours, and they were working really, really hard. But on a Monday, I would have a driver turn up to my office with a scrap of paper and a wing mirror and say, it's only a scratch, don't worry. And then I'd go down and I'd look at the car and it was a complete write-off, and they wouldn't have all the correct information that would then help me as the fleet owner to then mitigate my losses and to action that claim immediately. So I did look for a product on the market, because that would have been a lot easier to have just been able to buy an off the shelf solution. And there wasn't any. So that then sparked that entrepreneurial spirit in me, which then made me decide, right, I'm going to set this company up myself. And 2 years later, we have Oh No.
Wow. Yeah, and that's powerful, because we hear so many of those stories where someone's in another business or at a job and something happens, some sort of problem. And it's funny, I was speaking with a friend of mine over the weekend, and he said, you know, entrepreneurs are like addicts to solving problems. They can't walk by a problem and not try and solve it, which I thought was a great, great definition. So you have this epiphany, this spark of an idea. Right. And you're own this fleet. Like, what happened next? How did you take that idea and turn it into the business that you have now?
So I had a great job. It was brilliant. I really enjoyed building the fleet up over 10 years and going from 40 cars to 500 over the 9 year period allowed me to really get to grips with putting procedures and processes into a business and growing organically. So I knew I had the skills to grow a company. I knew I didn't have the skills to grow a tech company, because I'm not really tech proficient at the time. So what I decided I needed to do was go really hard into the tech learning, learn about the software, learn about the problems that other fleets were facing, and how I could build a software product to help solve those problems. So I left the fleet position and spent a good year researching, talking to software companies, and really putting the effort into the area that I knew my skills were lacking. After that year, I was able to build a better picture of the product that I wanted to offer. And then I was able to do a full kind of 8 months of market research to make sure that the product that I wanted to offer would have a good market fit. And then now I'm at the stage where the product has been built. We found the software company, we've built the product, we're into testing mode, and we have a lot of customers ready to go on the platform because we did quite a lot of the hard work building up to this moment rather than building the product first and then trying to get customers on board. I've kind of done it the opposite way around.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, because typically we hear people just start and they figure it out and, ready, fire, aim type approaches. So you took the opposite approach where you did a lot of research, you did a lot of prep and made sure everything was lined up. And then you're actually, now you're launching.
Yeah, absolutely. And funding has a lot to do with that as well. So I knew that I didn't necessarily have the funds to build a software product because they are expensive, especially because this is an app and also a dashboard and also my own super admin dashboard. So there's three parts of this software puzzle that had to be built and developed. But what I did know, even though I didn't have the funds for that and I would have to raise the funds for that, I could do the brand building, the personal brand building and the marketing and the traction without many funds. So I was able to bootstrap those elements and really utilize my own time and my own skills while I raised the money to build the software. And that's why it was that approach, because I didn't have that chunk of money to be able to deep dive into development straight away.
Okay. And I remember when I met you, you said, I live my life on LinkedIn. And then when I went and saw your LinkedIn, I said, she's absolutely right. Because that was one of the things too, where I saw there's these posts where you're talking about it's late at night and you're working on some code and you're stuck and you're asking people for help. So, and for someone that doesn't have a tech background, you went straight headfirst into it and just started learning how to build software and write code?
I didn't learn how to build software or write the code, but what I learned was how to talk to developers in the right way. And that was a huge learning curve. So it's, as a founder and an entrepreneur with an idea, it's very clear. I knew exactly what I wanted and I knew exactly what I wanted built, but with no tech background, I didn't know the language. I didn't know how to communicate that to a software team right at the beginning. And that can actually, if you don't know how to communicate properly to developers, you can actually end up with things that are built that you didn't ask for, that aren't productive to future development and that are expensive. So by making sure that I was able to ask for the right things, produced a better result within budget. So unfortunately, I can't code myself and I'm not sure I would really have the headspace to do that. But I know now how to pitch the idea and approach the conversation to make sure that I get the output that I need.
Okay. And as you mentioned that the fundraising, did you have any experience with that prior? Or is that a brand new learning experience?
Oh my goodness. That is a learning experience, the fundraising. So I always say to people, I'm the kind of person, if you give me a pound, I will make you two. So I'm great at building a business, getting profit, selling. They're all the bits that I love, getting it out there. But with tech, you can't do that. You have to have some capital first to be able to build the product. And so going to investors and pitching my idea was really daunting, actually. And I found it, in all honesty, a little bit embarrassing because you feel like you're going to people at first almost begging, can I have some money? It wasn't until I flipped my mindset and said, Renee, actually, you have a valid product, you've got great traction, you've done a lot of hard work building up to this, that my mindset changed. And I went into investor meetings a lot more confident, a lot more self-assured. And actually, I wanted to be able to give them a positive experience of the pitch process. And I knew that they would be investing in a good, worthwhile product. And the moment I switched my mindset with that, I was able to really accelerate the funding process, and we managed to close our round within 6 weeks. So it was definitely a personal mindset change that helped gather momentum on the funding.
And that sounds like really quick for fundraising, as far as 6 weeks to close around it. Is that right?
It's pretty quick, but not if you count all the year and a half of plodding the pavement, trying to build the pitch deck, talking to fleet owners. But I needed all that. I needed that to have the confidence in really going to people and saying, we have got something here that people want to use and that people want to pay money for. And once you can get that across to investors and show them the proof, it's a lot easier to close the deal.
Got it. Now, when you first had the idea, right, and you decided you're going to do this, and then you said first you took the year off to learn and study the market and prepare everything, like, what was that like? Because I think a lot of people have these ideas for a business, but they just, or they want to do something on their own, but they don't know how to go about it or where to start or to just get out and do it. Like, what was that like, taking that leap and proceeding when it's just an idea?
Very scary, because being a single parent, I was responsible for the household and my child's, the income and the roof over our head. So I had to make a really serious decision that I was going to do this and move forward with Ono. I saved very hard the year leading up to it. It was COVID, so that helped. I didn't have as many dinners out to pay for. So I was able to conserve as much money as possible. I also made sure that I minimized all my monthly outgoings. So I bought a phone outright, and I'm still on a minimum contract for that. So I'm on like a £9 a month contract for my phone. I consolidated a lot of my personal outgoings to make sure that I wasn't spending unnecessarily. And I really made sure that I had enough like savings behind me to give me a good 9 months to a year of not having to bring a wage in. But that was, I've changed my car. I changed a lot of my habits. I don't have as many pairs of shoes or handbags, which is devastating. I love those. But I had to make some big sacrifices, and I'm still sacrificing. And this sounds crazy, but I'm so pleased about this, because I do not begrudge any money that I've spent on the business so far or any sacrifices that I've had to make. And my daughter is fully aware of the sacrifices we've had to make, because you would hope that positive outcomes are going to come when we start hitting revenue generating in the next kind of 3 to 4 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive, right? Because like you said, it's a big sacrifice, and it's over a period of it's coming up on 2 years now, right? And to, like you said, sacrifice the lifestyle.
Definitely. And people need to be prepared for that, because we all have ideas. We all sit around the table, sit at the pub and go, oh, there's an app for that. Or have you thought about doing this? Or that's a great idea. But actually, I would always give the advice, try and do some market research before you take the leap and quit your job. Even if you needed to do a part-time job alongside trying to build your business and building a career. So I still did some fleet consultancy, some recruitment to get some little pockets of money in to help me. It's why I've been able to do 2 years now. And be prepared for really, really long hours. It's not all dinners. It's not all investment events. It's not all glamorous flying all over the world. It is hard work. It's trying to do a day job, plus work until sometimes 2, 3 in the morning, waking up, having a smile on your face, and doing it hard graft every single day. It's not the glamorous, self-employed, I can take Fridays off if I want to mentality. No, be prepared to work hard and reap the rewards later.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the motivation too for this process, or this podcast rather, is, you know, when I became a startup founder, it was a lot different than I thought it was. And I've talked to so many people just like you. And like you said, it's not all glamorous. It's not like the social media version of what an entrepreneur is like. It's a lot of work. It's hard. things take longer than expected. You're constantly facing disappointments, rejection, uncertainty, things not working out, and you have to figure it out. So I'm glad you detailed it like that.
Yeah, and you made a really good point about the rejection. That can be really difficult because when you've got an idea that you love and is your baby and you are so attached to an idea, and then you're pitching it to people and they're not getting it, or they're not on the same wavelength, or they don't have the same passion or enthusiasm for your idea or product that you have, it can be really disheartening. And sometimes you want to kind of go, am I doing the right thing? And that's when you need to give yourself a little kick and say, yeah, let's do it again. And then you need to put your smile on and you need to go again and again and again. Because when you look at all the big founder stories, they face tons of rejection. And it's how you handle that and how you move forward from that that will build your character as as not only an entrepreneur, but also as a business owner.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, like you said too, right? A lot of founders and a lot of the big people that we hear about and we admire, they went through some crazy stories in terms of where their business was and how bad it was, things taking longer and rejection. Do you have any strategies too, where, like, for instance, you're excited about a meeting or a certain direction in your business or closing something or and then it just completely fails, and you're like, what just happened? And you have to pick yourself up and do it again the next day. Do you have any strategy for dealing with that type of stuff?
Well, apart from some really great flavored gin, which comes in handy every now and again, I do actually. And I always say to my single friends as well, or those that are looking for a job, I always say you need something lined up afterwards. So you're not putting all your eggs in one basket and you're not putting all your energy and effort into that meeting that's tomorrow at 10, because you know, good or bad, you've got another meeting the next day at 12. So you're constantly moving forward. And then that means you'll constantly need to brush yourself off, whether it's an interview for a job and you think, oh, I didn't get it. No problem. We've got another one tomorrow at 12. Always be moving forward. Always look for the next opportunity, because it means your mindset has to flip. So if you've had a bad meeting, a bad day, a bad interview, it's fine because you get a chance to redo that tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And that's how I do that with a lot of things, a meeting, like I say, or pitches. I always have something planned that I can then look forward to, and I can then try again and wipe the slate clean. And here we go.
Okay. Now, also, you mentioned being a single parent and how hard that is in terms of running the business. I think I mentioned it to you when I met you or one of our subsequent conversations, but I remember an article from Kevin O'Leary and I looked it up again, but he said when he's looking for entrepreneurs or companies to invest in, he said every single time he would choose a female entrepreneur over a male. And he went into detail and he said the reason that women make better entrepreneurs, and particularly think of the busy mom, is they're very good on time management. They set realistic goals and they actually listen to critique and feedback and will adjust based
Do you have his
on
number?
it. Like what
He sounds the perfect investor.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'll see if I can do an intro. But how is like being a mom, right, help prepare you for everything you have to juggle as a startup founder?
Mean, those comments are spot on. They're exactly what we have to do. As single parents, even mums in general with a family support, we are constantly on the go. My brain in particular is always thinking, not just work, but football, extra lessons, what times pick up, has she got a detention that I need to factor in? All these little elements that keep you going, so you can't rest. And it does help with the organizational skills, because you have to be on point with everything. Everything in my life is structured, organized. I condense a lot of things. So I'll make sure that all my meetings, all my face-to-face meetings are on one day, all my Zooms are compact on another day. I work very much in between the school hours when it comes to communicating with people, because then I can have that bit of mum time after school time and then go into my own administration when dinner's done, bath and bed is finished. That those hours between sort of 8 o'clock and midnight then become my work, admin, checking out code, all that kind of period. So it's just really sectioning my day and sectioning my time and really making the most of every hour that I have in the day.
Okay. Now, also, too, I saw on your LinkedIn, and I thought this was really interesting. So you mentioned, your consultancy, and then I think you said in the post you're actually just helping out a friend, and you said you're doing some hiring for them. And you said in the post, when you're hiring, energy, culture fit, and passion for the job come first, and skills come second. So can you just talk, and I know you had a long management history with the other business where you hired a lot of people. Can you just talk about your approach to hiring?
Definitely. And that's exactly it. And I stand by those comments. Like I said, I've ran the fleet for 10 years, and the fleet was a very boisterous industry, very banter driven, and it was very testing at some times. And you had to have a really good mix of people that fit together, but also understood the culture of the business. And sometimes if you put the wrong personality into that mix, it didn't quite work. So I learned sometimes the hard way in building up those, like, kind of, I would call them pools of recruitment in different areas of the business, because you can have different cultures in different sectors of the business as well. And it really made me think about making sure we had a variety of people, but all with that kind of common goal and common value and common sense of humor, which was really important. The skills I was able to teach, a lot of the skills I was able to teach, or I would make sure that the recruitment adverts were very specific. So if there were certain skills that I really needed and couldn't do without, they would be on the job advertisement. However, that would mean I could narrow down the candidate very quickly because I knew they had those certain elements of skills, but then we could start to recruit based on culture and personality and humor. So it's trying to build that mix. And also, I would also recommend always trying to recruit somebody cleverer than you. Never be frightened of putting staff into a business that have more skills than you in a certain area or more talent in a certain area, because you as a business owner or as a boss can learn heaps from those that have better skills in different areas than you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so true. Especially as when we're looking for talent, we always want someone smarter than us, better than us, that we can learn from and of course can execute.
Definitely.
Another thing too that I wanted to highlight about you, because when we met, it was at the startup zone at Move America in Austin, Texas, which is a Terrapin event, and Terrapin has been a great company, and they have a few different shows, and I love these startup founder, or they call them villages, where basically if you're a startup, you get a free booth with the hope and the expectation that you'll get promotion for your business, it'll help you kind of launch and grow, and then in the future you'll come back and you'll spend some money at the show. Like, that's the concept behind it. And when you go to these events, you meet all sorts of other entrepreneurs, startup founders with a story and with a business that they're all in on. And it's really a cool environment. And when we met, introduced myself, and we kind of exchanged info about what we're doing. And I mentioned I was speaking at the show, which was the following day. And you said, oh, that's great, I'll come see you speak. And I said, oh, that's really nice of her. And what was so impressive is you on time, early, I think you were 10 minutes early, you came and you showed up, because after I saw you, we went our separate way and we were both busy with the show. And it was like about 18 hours later after that, and you actually showed up and you were there. And I was so impressed with that, because People tell me they're going to do all kinds of things, and a lot of times it doesn't happen, and it, it just is what it is. But where does that come from in terms of like just, being so willing to, yes, what's the word I'm looking for? Just help others and go the extra mile and honor what you said you were going to.
Well, I'm just a fabulous person. No. No, I absolutely believe in the law of attraction, and I believe that what you give, you will receive. And I love supporting people. The amount of support that I've been given, and I'm continued to be given through this journey, that any time that I can support somebody, champion them, be their cheerleader, I will turn up, I will show up, and if I say I'm going to do something, I will deliver on anything. And if that's being a support to somebody, if it's getting a report in on time, if it's being there to help recruit, I love to help. I really do. And I suppose Ono, in essence, is a tool for helping. We don't charge if somebody has an accident. My core values are that we don't make money from anything like that. We actually want to be there to help, and that's intrinsic to how I am as a person. So I suppose it's natural, but also I've received a lot of help, so I like to give where I can as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And talk about being one of the most stressful times ever, right? Is when you get in a car accident. I've been in a handful myself, never work related, but just like you're driving, everything's fine. And next thing you know, you're in an accident. It's like, oh my God, what do I do? Right. And it's seems natural that stuff will get missed. You won't have your checklist nearby, right? No one's planning on getting an accident. So yeah, it seems like a good, right.
It's actually fact, when you have a stressful situation such as an accident, whether it's a car accident or a slip, a fall, your brain capacity actually reduces by 20%, which means, and it also turns on your fight or flight mode. So that's why when people get into an accident, a lot of people drive off because they're doing the flight mode. Or a lot of people come out of their car and they're instantly aggressive and they're instantly twisting the blame on the other person. And if we actually appreciate that that's a natural reaction, it's not necessarily how they're feeling, it's just their brain is kind of switching that chemical on to tell them to act like this. That's why Ono tries to take that stress away, lead them through a process that they can then concentrate on just filling out some boxes, and it stops them having to react so emotively. So it is definitely a stressful situation. And I always say to people, just take a breath. Let's stop the blame and let's just take a breath and open the app.
Yeah. And I think you were explaining to me too what we met in terms of like being a fleet owner, like the cost in terms of if you wait to report the accident or if you wait to collect the data, there's a significant cost that will increase from the incident versus if you're able to handle everything quickly and do it differently. Can you just speak on that for like fleet owners and others that might be listening and wondering more about how this can help them?
Absolutely. So, if on average a claim costs around £3,000, English pounds, that would be for personal injury, any replacement vehicle, and any credit hire that a third party may have received. If a driver reports that claim within 4 hours, you've got a much better chance of reducing the cost of that claim. If you report the claim over 10 days, the claim costs can double to around 6,000. And if you report that claim over 14 days, it can go to around 9,000. Now, if I told you the average reporting time for a fleet operator in the UK was 18 days, we are looking at something well over the 14 days. In that time, if it's a your fault accident, which we would call a fault accident, then that third party has been able to go to a potential solicitor, a claims management company, have a new car, have storage costs, extra repair costs, and they've added up every single day while the other third party insurer is trying to find out who crashed the car, what are the details. And as a fleet owner, you don't know because your driver's not reported it. It was costing me a lot of money every year with late reporting and drivers not getting all the correct information at the roadside. And I needed to solve that problem, because if we can get instant reporting straight through to the fleet operator, who can then instantly report it to the insurer, we are looking at minimizing costs instantly.
Wow. Okay. And so now you're in beta testing, and what's the plan in terms of in the launch?
Oh, well, apart from reading you out my 16-page beta testing document, which has been lovingly created over the last few months. In short, we go live on the App Store around mid-November. So we will have a lot of individual drivers testing it. I can send it out to people all over the world. So we look out on my LinkedIn, because I'll be sending out an announcement. Who wants to beta test the app? There may be a little hoodie in it for a special winner if you do enter into our beta testing draw. And then we will look to go to revenue generating from the end of January next year. So we're going to test for 6 weeks. We've got some great fleets signed up, ready to test. Then we'll do a couple of edits, see what the fleets want changed. And then we will go to live to everybody from the end of January.
Wow, that's exciting. And is this in the UK or is this globally?
It's in the UK at the moment. Then my beta testers are in the UK. We are looking out and in discussions with a fleet in New York. I'm very interested in trying to get a couple of extra American fleet operators on board, regardless of fleet size, just so I can see if there are any nuances that are specifically related to American fleets, because then we can start adding those in earlier rather than later to be ready for the American market quickly.
Okay. And I think there was a story too on with the New York thing about how you went to Prague as far as to...
Yeah, meet up with a great guy who's very influential in the world of taxis and limousines, extremely well-versed, so much history. And I was able to pitch the idea, explain to him what it's about, and he's going to help me look at some fleets in New York and get the testing set up over there first. So if we can make it work in New York, I'm pretty sure we can make it work anywhere.
That's the saying, right? If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah, Frank for you on a Friday.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, and I saw it on your LinkedIn. And so it's basically you connected with this person, and there was some potential, and he said, I'm speaking in Prague, and you were like, I'll come meet you in Prague, basically?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was at the World Travel Safety Congress, which was really fascinating. It was a government based congress meeting conference, and these PIARC had been creating reports based on road safety, road transport over the past 4 years. And this was them delivering their results of those reports. And it was fascinating to hear about all this collaboration and research that had gone into delivering these reports about road safety, about getting people into the transport industry, trucking, and even UK highways were there. So that was fascinating to have that insight into a different side of roads, not just taxi and limousines. I'm very much a go-getter, I would say. And I do like to kind of take the chance on any opportunity that provides itself to me. So I love a conference, I love learning, and I love meeting new people. And this was the perfect opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and that's so important too, when you have these impulses or these ideas or these, like, I should really do this, right? I think that's so important. When it feels right, you just do it. And because so many people, right, the fear holds them back, or your rational mind will start trying to keep you safe and comfortable. But you know, there's so much value in when you just do it. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how it's going to work out. But oftentimes, like you said, if you're driven, you have an idea you believe in, you're committed to this business, you'll find a way to make something positive happen.
Definitely feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Use 100%. It and go for it.
100%. 100%. Okay. So you're launching on the App Store in November, finishing up with the beta testing, and you're going to go live in January. If people want to get a hold of you or learn more, potentially be a part of it, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
Please find me on LinkedIn, Renee Rogers. You will see my headline is Let's Not Meet by Accident. Definitely take a look at my little video as well. Very proud of that. DM me, contact me, or if you wanted to check out Ono first, you're more than welcome to go onto the website onoapp.co and you can contact me there. And I'll be in touch and we can have a chat. And I love a Zoom call. Love to meet the people that want to be beta testers. And we can go from there.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Renee. Best of luck with everything you're doing with Ono. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you, everyone.
Hello again. Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.